Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10 on this Friday, the 9th of May, 2025. Here's hoping for a slow news day because it's all a bit much at the minute. Looking ahead though, the sunshine is everywhere. The mood is good in places. It might be dragging in others, but we're here to help you hang out the washing and plan the picnic. It'll be time to bring in the child of Prags now by Monday or the country will be in total drought. But for now, we can enjoy it. And even we'll allow you put on your sandals. That's how much of a good mood we're in. Who's judging these days? Let us know of what you think about the world in the usual way on the WhatsApp. That's 087 032 32 32, and as ever you can write your longer letters on the email oliver@rte.ie. It's just been an unbelievably busy week. It's kind of hard to sum the whole thing up. You had India and Pakistan moving ever closer to war earlier in the week, both of them nuclear powers. The Gaza catastrophe still going on, unfortunately. Britain and America then surprise everyone with a trade deal that is so short on details. There's questions whether it's actually a trade deal at all, but they're going to get a lot of beef coming into America, or into Britain it seems, American stuff full of the hormones and all that. And this, of course, in the backdrop of Trump saying children should have fewer dolls and only 5 pencils as the price of the trade war, while his graspy family get richer and crypto and Middle Eastern property deals and so on. And the barely noticeable 80 years since the end of World War II in Europe, it was the most seminal moment in the history that's no longer understood to our despair. And Russia celebrated VE Day by having exact replica of a burnt out Reichstag and theme park style entertainment reenactments, while claiming the Soviets kind of beat the Nazis on their own. Look it up, I'm not joking. A new pope arrived onto the balcony, the American son of immigrant families long, long ago. He's criticised the country's Catholic convert vice president. He wore, though, skirts, presumably to declare where he stands on the issue that dominated Irish headlines this week, which is camogie women trapped in their skorts. And then, of course, Joe Duffy, very deftly and in a very classy, understated way, announces he's slipping out of the live line in June. The Montrose monarch has abdicated. He's hanging up and deleting the country from his phone. It was a day of Pope and change, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, many people would have just been looking at the Lions squad being announced. No Sam Prendergast, but 15 Irish players. So it is very much the Irish and British Lions now. And by the way, Joe will be on the Late Late Show this evening. That's mainly to prove that he's still alive and not dead, because some of the tributes you're hearing are going, oh my God, is he okay? Still very much alive. At the very last Late Late Show of the season, or as it's being known for the conclavey week that's in it, Patrick Keelty's Room of Tears. Somebody bring the poor man a box of Kleenex. It's all too much for him. There's a mad lineup, by the way, on the Late Late Show, just announced in the last hour. Tom Brady, the Super Bowl champion 7 times, makes his debut on Friday. Of course it's a debut. It's an incredible guest to have on, the NFL legend Tom Brady, who is going to be sitting in the same room as Joe Duffy and Nadine Coyle of Girls Aloud. And of course she's one of the great Derry girls. Music from Emmy, who is representing Ireland in the Eurovision Song Contest next week. So that's the mad lineup. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Last of the season. Sorry, it's just something in my eye. Get the man a box of tissues, for goodness sake. Memories of Liveline obviously being discussed hither and thither, but the greatest ever episode in our view, and we've gone through everything. Lockdown 2020, remember that? When Normal People, the Sally Rooney adaptation on telly, landed on RTE, and people who'd never seen the level of friskiness among teenagers of the noughties lit up the live line and they talked to Joe. Incredible. Strap yourselves in.
Well, it's described to me as the eagerly awaited adaptation of a novel, yeah, which I never heard of.
That's fair.
So
enough.
Naturally, I tuned into it. Well, I imagined it was like something you would expect to see in a porno movie. Certainly not for family viewing.
What would you see in a porno movie, Mary?
Well, I don't know, because I never watched one. I've just imagined.
Okay. I got phone calls from 2 or 3 young married women in the parish here, and they have young children, young girls and boys, and they were horrified at it, and they said, what can we do about this?
Yeah, you know what they can do? They can pick up the remote control.
Exactly, of course.
I watched Normal People the other night, and I actually, as a 19-year-old, I thought it was probably one of the most realistic portrayals of I mean, of everything that I've seen on TV.
No, in Galway, places like that, they say girls are almost asking fellas to go to bed nearly on first dates. They think it's a natural thing to do, unfortunately.
Is it a natural thing to do?
Oh, it is natural, but not in that setting, you know. And
eating.
In all fairness, you know yourself, marriage is the best place for it, isn't it, really?
No, I don't know that. I'm sorry. Yeah.
The point is, it's filthy, in my opinion, and I won't be watching the rest of it.
Wash your eyes, 51551 basically. And as ever, the greatness of it is that Joe Duffy's barely there throughout the whole thing. He's just in the background, gently guiding the whole thing. So enjoy the late, late Joe and the very long farewell all the way to the 27th of June. By the way, last episode of Callan's Kicks as well for the season tonight. I've still a lot of it to do and write and record, but my God, not much about Irish politics because it's gone into total hibernation. I think all the TDs now feel they're in transition year for the next 4 years, then they'll just cram for the final year before the election. I mean, there's zero ideas from either government or opposition benches at the moment, just after their holidays. I mean, goodness. You'd think there was nothing to fix in the country. It seems like a long time since we had a fight about a czar's wages or somebody's two fingers being pointed at a camera that shouldn't have been filming in the first place. 51551 is the text. Wash your hands. The text already on to us this morning. Isn't it ironic? On the same day, one 69-year-old steps back, another 69-year-old steps up. I suppose it's up to one's belief system and the grace of God. Well, the grace of the Holy Spirit, we're told. And someone else saying, Donald Trump wants to make the election of the first American Pope a typical bragging, boasting issue, even taking some of the credit himself, says John. For the record, Trump said, it's an honour to realise it's the first American Pope. What excitement, what a great honour for our country. I look forward to meeting Pope Leo X1V. It's a strange name. A very meaningful moment. That's a direct quote from his Truth Social post. I'm using air quotations. Now, the new Pope, what a sensational television event it was. Nobody does camp quite like the Vatican. The giant damask red curtains, like a theatrical presentation of America's next top pontiff, is being unveiled. And you literally don't find out who's the winner until the man with the kind of ropey Latin said it in a 1980s microphone, and then they bring out the fresh monarch in his new threads. And instantly we knew, wow, the Pope Francis era might be over here, because the new guy was rocking all the bling that Francis has had discarded. The Argentinian, he arrived out in just plain white. It was nighttime when he was unveiled at the balcony, and that was his get-up for the whole time on the throne. The Chicago dude, though, was lit up with the Got Rocks adornments of previous papal largesse, because there's a boom-boom period in fashion at the moment that's been ushered in by Trump's reign. I would say this Pope Leo is probably going to move back into the lavish apartments, not the hostel. I'd wager. And then he spoke very gently in Italian and Spanish, and everyone's Googling furiously, and we found out, oh, he's very quiet intellectual. Apparently he likes tennis, very good at playing tennis. He likes to cook. Always known as Bob to his friends. Okay, so he's a very humble guy. One review on the New York Times, a profile, said he's serene, which is kind of code for he doesn't do the kind of crowd-friendly mass appeal thing that Francis had. We won't see him plucking babies out of the audience or quoting. He won't be quoted swearing in the background or slagging nuns like the last Pope. So he's a serious guy, this Leo. And as devotees of the fire sign in astrology will know, Leos are known for their confidence, generosity and passionate nature. So you can strike out the passion bit, because the Pope is a Virgo. He turns 70 in September. Not passionate, very calm, very centrist. It was a very unexpected choice. Live at the BBC, they flashed up on phone alerts, the news notifications, that Pope Leon was elected. Somebody really got fat fingers in that moment. And the anchor woman, she kept saying, it's Pope Leon. And then there was kind of, she had this halting speech. It was clear she was reading out Wikipedia, but she'd never heard of this guy before. It was like someone in a basement in Peru in pyjamas was live updating the Wikipedia page. And they didn't know who he was, although the Italian press had included him in their favourites all week. I also found the drone shots were a new addition, a new modern kind of upgrade to the papal coverage. They were just stunning, swooping across the balconies. They were heaving with the scarlet-clad cardinals who were looking as merry as a stag do for a friend who's on the second time out. And it was just brilliant television, the drama and the visuals and the gravitas of the moment. I didn't know the Vatican had its own brass band, and it's apparently the Pontifical Swiss Guard Band, based in Switzerland, but they can never perform outside the Vatican walls. And they were brilliant, really added to the kind of grandeur of the whole thing. Perfect time of day as well. Dappled evening sunlight on the marble edifice of St. Peter's. 50,000 souls gathered in the square. Very happy, very joyous looking occasion. Totally at odds with the pressure. This poor American man is now under to be everything to everyone in a city riddled with the curia meddling and all the whispers. But the Americanism of the Pope kind of astonished everyone, and all the searching goes into finding out, is he conservative, is he liberal? He's basically on the fence, and he's no fan of J.D. Vance, that's for sure. In February, he posted on Twitter, because Pope Leo is a Twitterer, there was an article from the National Catholic Reporter in America that had the headline, J.D. Vance is wrong. Jesus doesn't ask us to rank our love for others. So it's a bit of a wallop. It had 3 million views when we first spotted it yesterday evening at around before 7 o'clock. It has over 20 million views now. So what a blow. The man who met the last pope, who promptly died after J.D. Vance's meeting, converted to Catholicism and doesn't seem to be liked by any of the popes. The article itself, I'll sum it up for you. The main argument against J.D. Vance is that he says Christianity requires us to prioritise our love in a ranked order. J.D. Vance's version, family first, then your community, then your country, and finally the world. And the article says that misrepresents the teaching of Christ. Kat Armas is her name. She contends Jesus preached a radically inclusive love that transcends social, familial and national boundaries. She says the ranking love to leads to exclusion and contradicts the gospel's call to love all people equally and without condition, especially the marginalised and the outsider. This is what Pope Leo XIV was endorsing, essentially, in that post just a few weeks ago. The other scramble is finding out what he thinks of all the pressing issues. We know he's very sympathetic to immigrants. He believes in climate action, which aligns him perfectly with the Francis era. But he diverges from Francis on LGBT matters. He hasn't said much about it lately. 2012, he lamented Western news media and popular culture like films fostering a sympathy for beliefs and practices that he says are at odds with the gospel in its portrayal of the gays. And he cited the homosexual lifestyle and alternative families comprised of same-sex partners and their adopted children. Now, he may move from that position. That's where Francis would have started out as well. And of course, he changed. Also criticised over his dealings with priests accused of sexual abuse in Latin America. One woman said she and two other women were sexually abused by two priests as girls long before Robert Prevost was a bishop, and accused him of mishandling an investigation of not stopping one of the priests from celebrating Mass. But supporters of the Bishop Prevost, as he was at the time, said he was just the target of a smear campaign by members of a Peruvian-based Catholic movement that Pope Francis subsequently disbanded. The New York Times is very excited about his Creole heritage, saying the Chicago-born cardinal is descended from Creole people of colour. From New Orleans, this revelation of the Pope's new heritage is a tremendous moment for the history of Louisiana Creoles, say the local historians down there, that the Pope's maternal grandparents are described as black or mulatto in various historical records. They lived in New Orleans in an area that's traditionally Catholic and a lot of kind of a melting pot of people with African, Caribbean and European roots. That makes it really, really interesting. This heritage confirmed by his brother. There's an interview with him, which is very curious as well. His brother, John Prevost, and he says he's accustomed to calling his brother Rob, and says Rob, as he's calling him, is a great desire to help the downtrodden, the disenfranchised, the people who are ignored, and said he'd carry on the legacy of his pope, of the previous pope. So the two brothers, they speak by phone every night, but they haven't spoken since the conclave began, clearly. He said the new pope is simple, really. He's not going to go out for a 19-course meal. Last August, the two brothers stayed with each other. Well, he went to his brother's home in New Lenox. This guy is an educator. They grew up in Dalton, Illinois, just outside Chicago. Went to church and school at St. Mary of the Assumption Parish in the south side of Chicago. Their dad, Louis, was a school superintendent. That's a kigara. And the mother, Mildred, was a librarian, all deeply involved in parish life. There are three brothers, John, Robert, who's now Pope Louis, and the other son, who's not named here, but he lives in Florida now. And he says, the Pope, his brother, the Pope, according to his brother, is middle of the road. I don't think we'll see extremes either way. He said he won't be afraid to use his new platform. How far he'll go is anyone's guess, but he won't just sit back. And very notably, he says he's not happy with what's going on with immigration in the United States. I know that for a fact. Their parents died years ago, but he said they would be on cloud nine. Hasn't been able to reach his brother since, and he doesn't know if he'll get to Rome or how that would work. But in the most important immediate term, he said there's one thing he needs to clear up. The Pope is not a fan of the Chicago Cubs. He's always cheered for the White Sox. That's baseball for the rest of us. Now, we've heard Pope Leo speaking in Italian and in Spanish. Have we heard him speaking in English yet? Well, here he is speaking in English. We know he spent a lot of his life in a Latin country. Have a listen to this. He was the prefect of the Dicastery for Bishops, speaking to the Catholic News Service in 2012 about his order's founder, Saint Augustine, because he is one of the Augustinians. Here is Pope Leo XIV.
In the highly individualistic society that people are growing up in, people think that my experience is the criteria. Am I happy or I'm not happy? What that might really be is, do I feel pleasure or don't I feel pleasure, or do I feel selfish? And if I feel okay, then that's all that matters. Certainly Augustine's experience says that, well, that isn't enough, and maybe what you're calling happiness isn't authentic happiness, because you're going to lose that too. And most things that people seem to describe as, well, why are you happy today, are things that are either very superficial or at best, important for a short period of time, but that aren't going to last forever.
There you go. Very thoughtful man, very intellectual thinking individual. That's from 2012. That's Pope Leo XIV. Let's talk to someone who knows him. Father Brian O'Sullivan is an Irish Augustinian priest in Rome. He's from Glengariff in West Cork originally. Good morning to you, Father Brian.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
Not so bad at all. This is a lovely day, I'd imagine, for you. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster emotionally, I'd imagine, since around about 6 o'clock Irish time yesterday.
You can say that again. Yeah. Yeah. I was watching it here in the quietness of my own room, because I didn't rush over to the square. In fact, I didn't expect white smoke so soon, to be honest with you.
Not many people did.
But I was able to follow it here on the Italian television and also on the Irish television and online. So, I was very much part of what was happening. It was really, I didn't know how to react.
You know and have met the Pope, don't you? How do you know each other, Father Brian?
We worked together. I was in our international house beside the Vatican, actually. I went there in 2001, and I was there for 10 years as prior of that house. And he was elected general in 2001. So yeah. We had a lot of, obviously communication, in that time. We were in the same complex. So I knew him pretty well, yeah, I did. And I've known him in recent times, because after he came back and became cardinal, mm-hmm. he has been coming into the Curia for lunch and for prayers and that sort of thing at the Augustinian house. And I've met him there a few times at lunch and that. So, I'd know him pretty well.
You had lunch with him, I believe, very recently.
I did, yeah. The day after the funeral, I had lunch with him.
Wow.
In St. Monica, in the Curia, the others were there. The about community of about 10 or 12. So, I said to him, shaking hands and saying goodbye and wishing him well and wishing the guidance of the Spirit. And he said, I'll see you here in 2 weeks.
Did he?
So I said, well, you never know. We leave it to the Holy Spirit. So, it turned out...
Were you able to talk about the... Did you talk about the conclave when you met him? Because it's not even 2 weeks ago.
Not really, no. I didn't really. There were others, at the table as well. So I didn't... generally, at that stage, they were able to still able to talk about, the meetings, but without getting giving any details before they went into the conclave. So, you know, it's interesting, yeah.
Did he become more serious when he became a cardinal only 2 years ago?
No, he never changed.
He's
the same person, you know. No, he's that type of person. He's very grounded and very at ease within himself, I'd say,
really?
You know, as a person. He's easy to talk to, you know, you could go in and have a chat with him. You know, he doesn't look for attention and, you know, he wouldn't be hail fellow well met type of person, you know, he'd be very,
He's approachable but unshowy, is that fair to say?
Yes, exactly. That would be it. And he's a good listener. You know, you talk to him and he's very straight, you know. So he's,
That's a good sign.
Yes, Simon.
Bring us back to the moment. Sorry, Father Brian. Bring us back to the moment then yesterday when you're sitting there on your own in your apartments watching the Italian television, like the rest of the world. You've no idea who's going to appear in the balcony. Were you stunned when you saw your friend there?
No, not quite. But I was, you know, in the last while, especially the last week, the local papers here, particularly the paper I read called the Messaggero, it's a more Roman paper, he was moving up, you know, towards the front of the order of favourites.
Interesting,
know?
Yeah.
And... you know, I'd heard from people within the Vatican that he was very highly regarded. And obviously he was because of the appointments that he got. You know, the head of the Congregation for Bishops is a very central role, you know, because, you know, appointing bishops around the world. Mm-hmm. So he was a very good friend of Pope Francis, you know, they saw each other regularly.
Yeah.
But... yeah, so I had an idea, and I was thinking, is it going to be him, you know? And when it came so quickly, you know, which was after four rounds of voting is very quick.
It is.
I said it's one of the main front runners, you know. I thought maybe one of the front runners.
Much of the world probably missed, but the Italian papers, like the one you mentioned, Il Messaggero.
They were very much on top of it.
Did you have a little glass of something to celebrate?
No, I didn't. No.
You didn't?
I waited. There's a friend of mine staying with me, one of our confreres from Ireland, and I waited till he came back. We had, you know, we went out and celebrated. But it's a strange feeling, you know. And I stand there, as soon as they said Robertus Franciscus, I recognized it's him. You know, I just couldn't, you know, I got a lump in my throat. It's hard to believe. You feel with him, you know, standing there in front of the whole world.
Yeah.
And, you know, you say, God. Yeah, you know,
somebody you
calling,
know so well,
you know,
is the head of 1.4 billion Catholics around the world. It's an extraordinary moment.
Yes.
Do you feel
extraordinary?
Do you feel somewhat sorry for him because, as you say, he's a quiet, deep thinking guy. He doesn't like the limelight. He's going to have nothing but limelight now.
No, but he'd be able to handle it. Even yesterday on the balcony, I thought he was serene looking. He was nervous, but he was serene looking.
He was,
you know,
yeah.
And you know, I'd say he feels within himself. He believes that the Holy Spirit was, you know, helping obviously in the election of the Pope, and that he was elected so quickly that he has. He has big support from within the church, you know, and the hierarchy and the among the cardinals. That he feels, you know, this is what I'm called to, and I'll make the best of it. And he's a good leader. I mean, he's been in leadership for a lot of his time as a priest.
Good
he
point.
Was
he
was provincial in the of the Augustinians in Chicago in the Midwest province. And then he came as general, and he was re-elected. He, you know, he had 6 years plus 6 years. And, you know, that shows us, you know, a level of satisfaction, you know, if you're, he's re-elected. And he is very good judgment and a good leader. And that has been clear in all his work and all his life, you know.
Father Brian, thank you so much for the chat and the insight. You've given us a lot of information there. Should we wish you well? You're living and working in Rome. Father Brian O'Sullivan, thanks a million.
I am indeed, for the moment. Okay, thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Ciao. That's Father Brian O'Sullivan of Glengariff, but now in Rome. And now the it becomes old news quickly, doesn't it? Because now he has a lot of work to do. He has to get on with the matter of running this enormous church around the world. And he looks young and fit and healthy. He could have a very, very long papacy. So the world revolves on. We look ahead to the next thing. And it is a really mad weekend of sport to look ahead. There's tons of GAA, almost too much. You've got the Ulster final, Armagh and Donegal, and that's tomorrow. You've got the Leinster final, first since 2010, not featuring Dublin, between Louth and Meath. There's a great excitement in Louth because I see Louth flags everywhere up there at the weekend, and I'm sure it's the same in Meath around the same time. There's about 8 Tailteann Cup matches. There's hurling as well, ladies football as well, Dublin and Meath, that's the Leinster final. And of course there's that now famous Munster final in Camogie between Cork and Waterford, and whether that protest goes ahead. GA plus RT, it's everywhere, all the places. Hard to catch up with it. Looking back at 2010, I thought we'd find some bit of a Friday tune for ourselves. 51551 is the text. Do you remember this one at all? And on the WhatsApp, 087 032 32 North and South. Good morning.